the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Binance, the world's largest crypto exchange, recently announced that it had passed the 200 million registered user mark. To put that in some kind of perspective, that surpasses the largest banks in the world. Santander Bank, for example, has 166 million customers. China Construction Bank is 144 million, and Bank of China, about 130 million. Closer to home, Capitec Bank has 22 million customers, roughly one-third of South Africa's population. And that's another remarkable story of a company emerging from pretty much nowhere to market leadership in terms of customer growth in just 20 years. So for a crypto exchange to hit 200 million customers in just 7 years, remember Binance was launched in 2017, that tells us quite a bit about the emergence of crypto as a disruptive force in the financial world. Clearly, what's driving this is not just crypto speculators. More people are using crypto as a means of payment, and that perhaps is the real story of growth in crypto in the coming years. To look at this further, we're joined by Hannes Wessels, who is country manager for Binance. Hi, Hannes. Good to talk to you again.
Good day, Kieran. Delighted to be back here.
Right. So let's kick off on that. You've just surpassed the 200 million registered user mark. This is quite massive, and I think it tells us something about the evolution of crypto. How does one explain this? Surely not all Binance customers are crypto speculators. Where is this growth coming from?
So we look at it both from a demographic and a geographic perspective, and also a product range perspective. I think the question, where does it come from? It's very much to do with our product range, which I think is the broadest amongst all the exchanges. A lot of folks, as you rightly say, use the pay function. We've brought back MasterCard, so that will be rolled out again shortly. We have a world-class, if not best-in-class, pay option as part of the app. So you have a QR code by immersion. You scan that and the crypto automatically clears. And that's done in a way where you basically force rank your order of liquidation, which tokens do you want to use first, so you don't go into your Bitcoin if that's what's most valuable to you. So where are these users? In South Africa, more or less at the same time, we also passed the 1 million user mark, which is a great achievement for us locally, but obviously a relatively small portion of that 200 million mark. So a lot of those customers still sit in what I call the population dense areas of the world. You know, we still look at China, Hong Kong, the Philippines, Malaysia, etc. And high density rates there in terms of penetration and market penetration as well. So, if you look at the growth rate itself, you mentioned 2017. At the end of 2017, we were at 120,000 users. 2 years ago, we were at 100 million. And the second 100 million came in only 2 years. That is actually in line. If you look at the way we measure this, technology is measured in terms of adoption curve and something called Metcalfe's law, which measures the networked effect between nodes, all of us being a node and a user. So it's actually on trend with that. So we can expect it to grow even further from here. But we are now moving away from early adopters to early majority. That's going to be a term I think you're going to hear a lot going into the next year and a half in crypto, is that early majority.
Well, okay, just explain, what is early majority? When I looked it up recently, Binance's share of the world crypto market was about 45%. I don't know if that's the latest, or it used to be higher. It used to be 60, 70%, something like that.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of other exchanges coming into the market now. But, you know, I look at trading volumes yesterday on CoinMarketCap. We still cleared $15 billion of crypto trading in a day. The closest exchange in second place is Coinbase, and they've done $1.9 billion. Although, yeah, there's others like Bybit Bybit has done 4.7. But even then, that's a fraction of what we do. And it's to do, I think, both with the size of the liquidity pools that we have, which is what our users want, especially the more sophisticated traders, the ARB traders, etc., but also the breadth of the product suite. You mentioned stablecoins earlier. That's become a big part of our exchange, and specifically our payment function. So it's both depth and breadth, and both doing really well.
All right. So give us a sense of the demographics of the customers. Where are they based? What kind of customers are we talking about? Are they speculators? Are they yield hunters? Are they people looking to make payments outside of the banking sector?
So let's start with that first bit. I think the institutional customers all tell me they prefer Binance for a variety of reasons. A, that liquidity pool, because that gives you a thinner bit offer spread. And then also the sophistication of the network itself, the APIs, and the ease of trade once you get to a certain level. So definitely ARB traders, institutional traders, etc., yield hunters as you call them. Then also the average retail user in a number of these countries. So you have countries with high population density, but not overly sophisticated financial markets. Yes, they have banking systems, but there's a lot of cash still doing the rounds in these countries. And that's where I think crypto specifically become quite important, because the peer-to-peer payment function, the Binance Pay function, the ease of transacting specifically in stablecoin is just much easier than what the banking systems allow in these countries.
So stablecoins, that's a big area of growth. And I see recently there's been a lot of discussion in the United States how in the international financial market, there's been a move away from the US dollar. You see Saudi Arabia and countries like that now beginning to trade oil in non-US dollar currencies. But stablecoins, US dollar-backed stablecoins, are actually supporting the US dollar treasury in a way that was not seen before. Is this something that you're observing?
Yes, it is. I mean, I'm looking at USD Tether as the best example. It's all about the collateral base behind those. And these guys are very good at publishing their reserve bases. But, I mean, there's only a very small fraction being dollars on deposit. The rest is all US treasuries of different maturities. Now, this creates its own, can I say, dilemma, in a sense that the US can't really go after these guys if they wanted to. I'm not saying they want to, but they're such a big buyer of US debt, which we know at the moment the US government is printing at quite an alarming rate. But a big part of that debt is bought by Tether and other stable coins as a reserve base, as a collateral base. And then obviously that's deployed in the rest of the world. Always remind people that, I mean, the dollar economy extends way beyond the US. If you look at that euro-dollar market in the eurozone, used as a funding base. You look at the petrodollar market, used in the commodities market, it's very much a global currency still. So what's the alternative? You look at the renminbi, maybe the ruble, the BRICS currency basket, then there isn't really an alternative. So it all still goes through that dollar focal point.
Okay, let's talk about the BNB chain. Now, that's a blockchain that you developed to help developers and entrepreneurs as an alternative marketplace for digital assets, where you can buy, transact, you can spend, you can store. You also started a decentralized exchange. Now, we normally understand these as online marketplaces where there's no controlling authority, where users can transact without having to give their personal information. And that's why people like decentralized exchanges. The problem is that most of them are quite clunky, and they're not easy to use for newcomers. You really need to be very careful about how you transact on these decentralized exchanges. Binance itself is a centralized exchange, meaning that there is a controlling authority. If you launch a decentralized exchange, are you not cannibalizing your own exchange?
I think a quick differentiation there is that we've got a Web3 wallet, but a decentralized exchange, not so much. It's more of a convert function that we've got within the centralized exchange. But I think what you may be referring to is that decentralized wallet. And same question, does it cannibalize a part of our market share? And I think no. I think there's a large user group that want access to that almost independent wallet. And the reminder, we've got two. We've got the Web3 wallet on the Binance app and the web platform, and then we've also got the Trust wallet that's run separately, and that's completely off-chain. Customers want that stuff. They want their crypto to be off the centralized exchange. What I mean by off the centralized exchange is not part of those liquidity pools that I referred to previously. So you still get your seed phrase. You get a setup the same way you'll set up a decentralized wallet on some of the other platforms. Two benefits of that. The one is now you are on a regulated platform in countries where regulations are obviously in place. So you can still have recourse to a regulator. And the second thing is you have a DeFi wallet on
Binance, which means you know what you've got, you know who we are. We've been through bad weather. I mean, we were put next to FTX back in the day when obviously that went wrong and we withstood everything there simply because what we say our reserves are, they are. So you've got those benefits, and that alone attracts users as well. Whereas some of the others, I'm not going to comment on them specifically, but you really need to do your homework because how good is the security? You know, are you getting spammed into something where someone drains your wallet overnight, you open it the next morning and there's nothing in there? With us, you've got that sovereign fund, you've got that security, and I think that gives a lot of people peace of mind.
Okay, let's talk about the broader market for a minute. Give us a breakdown of the current surge we're seeing in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. I mean, it is down a little bit over the last week, but it's holding very firm, having broken new highs earlier this year. The market does seem to be quite bullish. We've had the launch of ETFs, exchange-traded funds, that brought institutional flows into Bitcoin and now Ethereum as well. That's about to be launched. What do you see as the things that are really driving this market?
I think the ETFs is definitely a contributor. If you track the net inflows since launch, I think we passed the 100 now. Obviously, the beginning was quite rocky with a lot of value trapped in that Grayscale trust. A lot of that exited because a lot of folks were in that early. They made big gains. They wanted to get out. A lot of them basically just recycled it out of Grayscale into BlackRock. But that drain seems to have stopped now. And bar this week, is generally positive in terms of incremental gains. You then look at the likes of MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor. I mean, whenever the market's down, he's buying. And it looks like he can't stop buying. I mean, he's got more than 200,000 bitcoins now. So you then look at, I think in the background, and I say I think because we'll know in time who they were, but I think there are sovereign nations other than El Salvador stacking as well. There's what some of the commentators refer to as Mr. 100. He used to buy 100 bitcoins a day, and then all of a sudden started buying 500 and 600 bitcoins a day. So you see a lot of that stacking, and I think as the corporate results season come out, you're going to see more and more and more corporates starting to use Bitcoin as a reserve currency, not only their resident fiat. So all of that stuff contributes. But then also, I think you mentioned it's been slightly, can I say, level in the last month and a half. Lots of hedge fund activity as well, where a lot of the funds will be long Bitcoin, but then short the derivative, the future, which is what the traders always refer to as a carry trade. That carry trade only lasts as long as, obviously, the funding rates on the derivatives are low enough and there's not a lot of retail money coming into the position itself or into the instrument itself. And I think it looks like a lot of that, a lot of those short positions are now getting closed, so we'll need to see what that means. But certainly it looks bullish if you reference it to previous market cycles.
I noticed the BNB coin, which is Binance's native cryptocurrency, that's more than doubled so far this year. That's quite extraordinary. What is the reason for that?
It correlates very well with the rest of the market. A lot of the other coins have also doubled, but I think the bigger growth rate came late for us. And I mean, first I admit, yes, we've been through a couple of rough pest cycles. A lot of that stabilized now where people say, well, hang on, the exchange continues to grow, the user numbers continue to grow. Even with the founder now no longer present in the company, it continues to grow. So that very solid base that he built, banking terms, you always would have said capital adequacy, you know, that remains solid, it remains integrated. So I think people just say, okay, well, let's test it a bit, let's see what happens. And obviously we passed that test and now it goes. Also, what we have done for the last year or so is we've got what we call a launch pool, where if you've got your BNB coins locked up in our what we call our BNB vault, then you get allocated new tokens as they launch on the exchange. It's basically saying if you hold JSE shares and a new share gets listed, or there's an IPO for a new share, you get a part of the share. I mean, that alone sounds a little ridiculous, but in crypto world, that can certainly happen because we use the BNB coin, obviously, to trade some of the other shares as a trading pair. And a lot of that stuff contributes to the popularity of it. So yeah, long way at last.
So anybody who is a customer, and does this mean that if they're holding their cryptocurrency on the Binance exchange, in other words, they're contributing to the liquidity pool, they get first shot at any new initial coin offerings that come about?
That's right. So if you're in that launch pool, it's a small technical point, you must have locked it up in that launch pool. But then, yes, if there's any new token launched in that launch pool, you get a portion of it.
All right. Now, talk about the issue of crypto regulation in South Africa. I presume you see this as a good thing. We have spoken about that in the past. Everybody seems to welcome this. Have you received a license yet under Binance, or are you still trading under a jurisdictional license under Five West?
So, yes and no. So let's start with where we are on the licensing. So firstly, yes, strongly endorse the licensing process. We welcome that for a number of reasons. South Africa needs to get off this dreaded FATF grey list. This is obviously a key contributor to that. We have applied. We were late applicant on our own behalf. We wanted to make sure there's a couple of other things in place. So late applicant means later consideration as well. And the folks at the FSCA tells me that that's still under consideration, but it may go deep into the remaining part of the year. So we engage with them regularly, need to give them an update again shortly, but we've not yet received the license. But we definitely engage with them and in close contact.
Okay, so you're still operating under the jurisdictional license with Five West?
For the derivative bit, yes. So just a clarification on that. We do and we will continue to, but that's for the derivative business only. The spot business, that we still under exemption, because we have applied, you remain under exemption, so completely and perfectly legal. And that will remain that bit. I think with the derivative offering, we're very happy with our juristic partnership with Five West. They're very innovative company. They add a lot of value to us on other fronts, specifically the fiat front. So we will just stay with that for the medium term and see how that goes. I think eventually you would like to bring everything under one umbrella, but I don't see that happening within the next 12 months at least.
And you mentioned earlier that you've got 1 million customers in South Africa, or you recently broke that mark. If you look at the likes of Luno, I think they're at 10 million. I don't know how many of those would be active, but do you have a goal to catch up with guys like Luno and Valor and some of the other crypto exchanges in the area?
Yeah, I think there's always healthy competition. For us, it's to make sure that we've got the most competitive offering. I think fiat off-ramps and on-ramps always remain a tricky one in South Africa. But that aside, I think if I look at our fiat volumes coming into Binance and I look at our overall volumes, a lot of folks also use the other exchanges to on-ramp their crypto onto Binance and then trade. So it's an ecosystem. I think we need them. They need us for those reasons. And is it completely independent or dependent? No, I think it's interdependent. But for our perspective, yes, we want to continue growing. We want to be competitive, and we want to make sure our users got access to all the products we've got. I think it's really transformative, and I think over time can just add to that freedom of money narrative that we've been driving so hard.
And people who would be opening accounts with multiple exchanges, with Binance, with Luno, Altcoin Trader, Valor, why would they be doing that? Because you are all independent exchanges. Are there arbitrage opportunities that they see, maybe prices cheaper on one exchange versus another?
I think both of those. So the arbitrage opportunity, definitely. I don't think it's a big thing in the retail space. Obviously, some folks do see the gap. I see quite a number of sophisticated traders who obviously run trading bots using APIs that ping, well, they'll be customers of all the exchanges, and they'll ping their networks multiple times in an hour to see where the prices are, and obviously the bot will then calculate whether we actually there's a price differential that makes sense net of fees to trade. But also it's the product suites. Some people prefer to trade spot on one exchange and then trade a derivative on another exchange. So I think again the ecosystem should provide as many opportunities as possible, and at the moment I think it does that.
You know, final question, Hannes. What should we be looking out for in the remaining 6 months of this year? What are the big events on the horizon that could shift the crypto market to the positive or the negative?
I think the US election is one, Kieran. We'll all track that. It's for the first time become a political playball between the candidates. I think you need to take all of them with a pinch of salt. But the big event for me is very much still interest rate cycles. A lot of the folks who go into the macro playbooks show you that a lot of this is correlated to liquidity, and liquidity is a function of interest rates. We've seen rates stay higher for longer. Initially, we expected, the Fed, a lot of the investment banks expected the Fed to have 4 cuts before the end of the year. Now it looks like we may only have 1. But at the same time, it looks like core inflation has become less sticky. It's beginning to come down slowly. So I think as soon as that happens, you'll start seeing cuts. I think the U.S. government specifically is under a lot of pressure to refinance a big part of their debt stack. And it makes sense to do that once the rates are lower, not higher. Otherwise, you basically just roll a lot of short-term debt waiting to issue long-term debt. So it's a dangerous game to play. And I think once that starts happening, you can see a lot of action in crypto.
Right. And if we are looking at lower interest rates going into 2025, what impact do you think that will have? Will that be positive for crypto?
Yes, traditionally it's always been correlated very positively to increase in prices, where obviously no one knows, but it also correlates very well with previous halving cycles through the cycle. Everything points to it that we can expect positive price action.
Hannes Wessels, thanks very much for joining us. We're going to leave it there. That's Hannes Wessels, who is the country manager for Binance.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.